San Diego Center for Spiritual Living, Sunday, March 8, 2026. Today's lesson is Two Mothers with Dr. Constance Cook Kaur. Good morning. Welcome home. This is an amazing day. We just heard Discerning Heart by Timothy Tye, and it is inspired by 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 9, where Solomon asks for wisdom. So today, let's anchor ourselves in. There is one power, one presence, one infinite intelligence which flows through all creation. And I call this God, the living spirit almighty. One indestructible, absolute, and self-existent cause in which we live and move and have our being. Today's lesson is called Two Mothers. And it too is about Solomon and the wisdom of Solomon. The wisdom of Solomon is like a catchphrase for when you want to say, boy, that person really made a good decision. That person really made a good choice. That person knows good from bad. They know what is right and what is not right. We say, ah, they have the wisdom of Solomon. There's a reason for that. Solomon was one of the most wise kings in all of the Bible, in all of the land. And he did that because he used his discernment. For March, our theme is truth of discernment. So I want to tell you a little bit about what discernment is. Discernment is when you apply the knowledge and wisdom that you have carefully. It's the difference between what you're told and what is. If you remember from our studies of the Four Agreement, there's this thing that the world does, not the universe, the world does, called human domestication. And what they do is they use tools to make rules and guidelines and societal norms with the purpose of creating a compliant society of rule followers. So whatever society you're in, the leaders of that society want you to be compliant and follow the rules that they've given you. That in itself should tell you that the rules are not perfect. Because in one society, we have one set of rules. In another society, we have another set of rules. And that plays out all over the world, in every community, in every nation, on every different continent. The people are different because they have been human domesticated different. Their society has domesticated them differently. This song I'm so excited about today's lesson that I keep getting ahead of myself. So today we have the lesson of Solomon and the two women. In the 12 Powers of Man on page 46, Charles Fillmore wrote, Solomon, when asked by the Lord what he should give him, chose wisdom above riches and honor. Then all the other things were added. Solomon was also a great judge. He had a rare intuition, and he used it freely in arriving at his judgments. He did not rest his investigations on mere facts, but sought out the inner motives. In the case of the two women who claimed the same infant, He commanded an attendant to bring a sword and cut the child in twain and give a half to each woman. Of course, the real mother begged him not to do this, and he knew at once she was the mother. The wisdom of Solomon. Solomon's father, David, was the king of Israel, and he was very, very old and pretty much in his sickbed. And he had a whole bunch of sons, and he had promised the mother of Solomon, he had a bunch of wives too, he promised Solomon's mother that Solomon would be the king. And while he was sick, one of the other sons decided, hey, dad's near dead, I'm going to go and I'm going to be the king. I don't care what he thinks, I'm just going to proclaim myself king because I'm here. And I've got the counsel of some of these other people and leaders. So he and a bunch of his buddies got together and started making sacrifices and having a big celebration, claiming he was the king and all hail this other son. And the prophet found out, Nathan the prophet found out about it. And so he went and he told Solomon's mother. And he said, now, Bathsheba was Solomon's mother. So Bathsheba, go complain to David and tell him that they're doing this without his knowledge and ask him what he's going to do about keeping his promise that Solomon was going to be the king. So Bathsheba goes, and while she's there doing all this, Nathan rushes in and says, oh, King David, this terrible thing is going on. And he recites the same thing that he had told Bathsheba. And David said, well, not on my watch. And so he told the people who were not invited, which were his close confidants, take Solomon, go out to this special place and anoint him as king, and then bring him back with my personal guard riding my personal donkey, bring him back with all this noise and wonder and stuff, saying, here's the new king, Solomon's the new king. So they did that. And when they got back, the other brother sent one of his friends out and said, what's going on? The friend comes back, he says, hey, Solomon's the king. They anointed him, and so he's the king now. And the brother who had tried to be king said, boy, I better get out of here. So he went and he hid in the temple, in the sanctuary, hanging on to the horns of some holy device that they had. That was sanctuary. That meant they couldn't kill him as long as he was holding on to that, if you ever wondered where the concept of sanctuary came from. So Solomon's going to be king, and he had a marriage alliance with the Pharaoh, king of Egypt. So the Israelites and the Egyptians were not always enemies. So he married Pharaoh's daughter, and during this time he started building the temple, and he was out in a town called, well, it doesn't matter what it's called, but he was out in this town where they were making the sacrifices until the temple was built in Jerusalem. And he had a dream while he was there. And the Lord appeared to Solomon in a dream. And in the Bible, it tells us that the Lord said, Solomon, I'm going to give you a gift. What gift do you want? What do you want here? And Solomon goes into a bunch of this, hey, this is a really big job, God. I know you guided my dad through all of the wisdom, and you made me king instead of my father, and I don't know how to come and go. I don't know how to go about doing all of these things. And so God said, okay. So in 1 Kings chapter 3, verse 9, Solomon answers God and says, "Give therefore thy servant an understanding heart to judge thy people, that I may discern between good and bad. For who is able to judge this thy so great a people?" He's saying, I need wisdom so I can discern, so I can do right by your people, God. That's what he's saying. And God was pleased. So he replied, "Because you have asked for wisdom in governing my people and haven't asked for a long life or riches for yourself or the defeat of your enemies, yes, I'll give you what you asked for. I will give you a wiser mind than anyone else has ever had or ever will have. And I will also give you what you didn't ask for, riches and honor. And no one in all the world will be as rich and famous as you for the rest of your life. And I will give you a long life if you follow me and obey my laws as your father David did." That's a pretty good gift. That's a good gift. In the song, The Discerning Heart, not only does Solomon ask the Lord for wisdom to govern his people, but he says in the song, "Who am I without your light? Who am I without your light?" In the Divine Science Federation International, there's an article about Know the Truth. In John chapter 8, verse 32, it says, "Ye shall know the truth, and the truth shall make you free." So what is something that you gain when you have discernment and wisdom? You gain the ability to see the truth and be free of deceit. So truth is the cause and free is the effect. And that allows us to move from blind faith into understanding by faith. The article wrote, "Know the truth. But what is the truth? It is not relative truth or facts of humankind, as these change according to man's conditioning and thinking. The truth of God is eternal, immutable, absolute. When we look out through human eyes, we see a world in chaos. When we look through God's eyes, we know the truth and help to free ourselves and perhaps even others to get back into their oneness with God." Now, Solomon knew when he ordered the baby to be divided between the two women that God's truth would be revealed. He never had any intention of dividing the baby. It was a vehicle. Because as God so loved his children, so a mother would love her child. So if the real mother was there, she would not allow the baby to be divided, and therefore the judgment could be made. In the 12 Powers of Man, Charles Fillmore also wrote, "When we awaken to the reality of our being, the light begins to break upon us from within, and we know the truth. We no longer accept the teachings of the worldly wise, but we know with an inner intuition, and we judge men and events from a new viewpoint." There's a group called the Interstellar Alliance Council, and they deliver these messages under the name the Oracle. Now, whether the IAC exists or not, the statement that they made is a spiritual truth. The dark night of the soul calls forth the light within, and when the light of truth comes forth, the blind shall see once again. I would not be surprised to find that is a biblical, it's in the scriptures somewhere. Certainly in other words, it is. So what happened when Solomon was in the temple and he was giving judgment on different issues? Well, let me share some of this. Okay, so it's 3, 11 to 14. Okay. He was there. Solomon was in the temple doing the judgments. And he invited all of his officials to a great banquet. A little while later, two young prostitutes came to the king to have an argument settled. Interesting, two young prostitutes. So prostitution was a profession way back then. "Sir," one of them began, "we live in the same house, just the two of us, and recently I had a baby. When it was 3 days old, this woman's baby was born too, but her baby died during the night when she rolled over on it in her sleep and smothered it. Then she got up in the night and took my son from beside me while I was asleep, and laid her dead child in my arms, and took mine to sleep beside her. And in the morning when I tried to feed my baby, it was dead. But when it became light outside, I saw that it wasn't my son at all." Then the other woman interrupted, "It certainly was her son, and the living child is mine." So you're already getting a clue as to who's the real mother. "No," the first woman said, "the dead one is yours and the living one is mine." And so they argued back and forth before the king. Then the king said, and I love this version of the Bible. It's just so cool. The king said, "Let's get the facts straight." Of course, that's not what he said in KGV, "Let's get the facts straight. Both of you claim the living child, and each says that the dead child belongs to the other. All right, bring me a sword." So a sword was brought to the king, and he said, "Divide the living child in two and give half to each of these women." Then the woman who was really the mother of the child and who loved him very much cried out, "Oh, no, sir, give her the child. Don't kill him." But the other woman said, "All right, it will be neither yours nor mine. Divide it between us." Then the king said, "Give the baby to the woman who wants him to live, for she is the mother." And word of the king's decision spread quickly throughout the entire nation, and all the people were awed as they realized the great wisdom God had given him. Great wisdom. Awesome way to settle an argument. Now, when my kids had issues about sharing, I would give them whatever they were supposed to share, and I'd say, "You cut, you choose." So whoever cut it was trying to cut the piece of pie or cut the donut or whatever in half so that they were equal, because the other one was going to choose. So there was none of this, "I'm going to cut you a little piece and keep the big piece" kind of thing going on. That was one of the things of wisdom that I learned from my mother. And I imagine she learned it somewhere in her family of multiple kids, and they learned it in their from their parents who were multiple kids, because people used to have anywhere from 9 to 15 kids. including both of my parents. Not that we had 9 to 15, but each of them came from very large families. So discernment is more refined than judgment. I'll give you kind of a visual example. Judgment is like the difference between black and white. Like if you get a coloring book that hasn't been colored yet, it has lines that are black outlining the lighter parts, and you are supposed to color and stay in the lines. That's judgment. Do this. Now you get to choose the color, but you still need to stay in the lines. Now discernment gives us all the lights and the shadows that give dimension to an object or a scene. Think about an Ansel Adams photograph with the depth and the distance and the beauty and just the way he captured shadows of plants on rocks. It just every photograph that Ansel Adams, that I have seen of his work, shows such dimension, such depth, such beauty, that it would never fit in a coloring book. There are no lines to color in. Everything blends. It's beautiful. And discernment is panoptic. And this might be a new word for some of you. But panoptic means comprising everything in one view, permitting everything to be seen. It's comprehensive. It's like a panoramic view. That's panoptic. I like it when I can find a new word that I can look up and, of course, look at the root and find out where it's from. It's from a Greek word. But it is a comprehensive panoramic view. And what do we need when we're looking at something and we have to choose? We don't need A is red, B is blue. We need, well, the reason that we've got a blue and the reason that we've got a red, and we can mix all these things together and see all the magentas and the purples and all of these things, and you're not stuck with red or blue. You're not stuck with black or white. Think about the yin-yang symbol. Black outline, curly line down the middle, one side's white with a black circle in it, the other side is black with a white circle in it. It looks just like geometry. But when you know what that symbol represents, the depth of meaning in that there is a wholeness and it is not isolated, it is not divided. In each side, there are elements of the other. It's all one. That is discernment. Judgment is, that's a geometric symbol. Discernment is the Tao. So how can we go about growing our own wisdom and discernment? We have lots of books here, and every now and then I notice a book and I go, where did that come from? This particular book, Collected Wisdom of Dr. Raymond Charles Barker, was in the bookcase, but it wasn't shelved with the books. So for some reason, it was sitting out on a stack of paper. And I thought, well, I must have done that in one of my spiritual travels. So, here's what Dr. Raymond Charles Barker wrote. Emerson said in one of his writings that the individual grows only when he is uncomfortable. This is a very interesting observation. The individual grows in consciousness and awareness only when he is uncomfortable. The individual grows only when he is creatively uncomfortable. I know a great many uncomfortable people who, due to their groaning and whining, are only going to be more uncomfortable. They are not uncomfortable in a creative way. So what he's talking about is when we stifle our own creativity, we are holding ourselves back. We are refusing to allow that creativity to express. And what is our creativity but the divine? We are expressing the divine love, the divine creativity, the divine wisdom. We are expressing the God that is within us, the spirit within. That's our job here, is to express the spirit within and experience others expressing as the divine. So we can grow when we recognize that we're no longer comfortable in what we call our comfort zone, or I call our familiar zone. So we can expand a little bit at a time and continue to grow in wisdom and in discernment. Have you ever heard that there's a phone number for God? Okay, God's phone number is 333, not 666. Well, there's a reason for that. There is a biblical verse. It's in the book of Jeremiah, and it is Jeremiah chapter 33, verse 3. And it says, "Call to me, and I will answer you and tell you great and hidden things you have not known." So if you ever think, I wish God had a phone, I could just call him up and ask him. Think of that, Jeremiah 33:3. Call to me. You don't need a phone to connect with the divine. We are connected in obvious and subtle ways to everything that is. Thomas Troward was another of our totally brilliant teachers in New Thought, and he wrote this is a compilation of two of his books, the Edinburgh Lectures and the Doré Lectures. So this is the Edinburgh and Doré Lectures on Mental Science. And Thomas Troward told us that every advance in science consists of discovering new subtleties of connection in the universe. We only need to recognize it to bring it into practical use. Meaning, if we don't recognize that there is a law, we certainly can't consciously use the law. Troward said that discovery is part of what helps us here, applying the wisdom of what we know to different ways of connecting, these subtle connections. We see pattern recognition, and that helps us to identify these subtle connections. But to continue to grow, we need to consciously cooperate with the law. And that can only happen through our own intelligence and effort. We need to commit to cooperating with the law, because the law is going to work no matter what we do or say. So why not allow it to work for us? In this book, on page 10, I want to share with you what he says about our own growth and in wisdom. It is a process of intelligent growth. No one else can grow for us. We must each grow for ourselves, and this intelligent growth consists in our increasing recognition of the universal law, which has brought us as far as we have yet got, and of our own individual relation to that law, based upon the fact that we ourselves are the most advanced product of it. He's saying humans are the greatest creation, the greatest ability to think for ourselves creation of the universe. It is a great maxim that nature obeys us precisely in proportion as we first obey nature. So our awareness of what is allows us to discern that there is a power for good greater than we are. It's in the universe and we can use it. We can use it with discernment. We can use it with love. We can use it with being the light. We can use it in being peace. Now, we are still in the season for nonviolence, and this is day 38. And I thought it was really cool because I was talking about Solomon and the two mothers and resolving the issue of the mother of the baby. It is, today I will hold children tenderly in thought or action. So today I will hold children tenderly in thought or action and know that each child is blessed with a loving and giving caretaker. Even when that loving and giving caretaker is simply the divine. And so I thank you for your time and your attention. Namaste.